freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go. It's a Brock and Salk podcast. Man, just hearing Bruce Drennan there, Brock, in the opener, would have been nice to get his thoughts on what he saw from the Mariners and Indians this past weekend, whether he recognized the Jared Kelnick future, what he thought about Kelnick going 3-4 the other day. Nice to hear what old Brucey had to say about that.
What did I see you tweeted? How many times did you watch Jet Kelnick home run?
I watched it a few, but I mean, that was before I got like the better like audio version of it, the Maura Dooley cell phone video. So I guess Maura, who produces the morning show here, Danny and Gallant, and Howdy were at the game together. Diamond Club seats.
Sitting very, very close to home plate.
Diamond Club. Diamond Club seats for Howdy.
Interesting. Yeah. Employees of the month.
Yeah, apparently. So Howdy's in the Diamond Club. Mora's there with him. I guess Maura only filmed one Kelnick, not just at bat, one Kelnick pitch. Is that right?
One pitch the entire night that she filmed.
So he's there, like, and she's like, okay, one time I'm going to film this one pitch just to show that I was in the Diamond Club watching Jared Kelnick.
Humble brag.
Little right. But like, you got to film. Hey, I'm right there with her. And the one pitch is this. So she films one pitch, it's a home run, and Howdy ruins it by screaming into her phone?
Game over, baby!
you ruined
come
it.
Come on!
It's not just the come on, it's a woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo!
You're the new woo guy.
How much fun is that?
I don't remember a whole lot of that experience, yeah. But man, that was the sound of that bat was...
Come on!
That's loud. That's some loud bat.
Yes.
That's loud bat.
That was an amazing experience.
Can you tell me a little bit, because of everything to sort of talk about with Kelnick, Brock, I'm sorry that we're going to let Howdy talk this much this early in the podcast. It's probably a mistake.
Oh, boy.
But he was there and we weren't. Kyle, you were there. Did you see the opener?
Thursday night.
Okay, so let's talk to you first.
I didn't see much out of Kelnick.
Howdy, you stay over there.
Fine.
We don't need you. No,
okay, first things first.
For both of you guys, what was there a palpable difference in buzz at the ballpark with Kelnick in the lineup?
Oh, it was crazy. As soon as Kelnick was walking up to the, even like the on deck circle, people were whispering and
really?
Talking to each other.
Exactly what I was going to say. You start to hear the murmurs.
Yeah.
You know, this is the young is kid they just called up from Tacoma.
Three rows
they got
ahead
him
of me,
from
there's...
the Mets. They're not happy about dealing him. a lot of the old man chatter. Well, this guy's supposed to be quite a player now. So, it was, you could feel it.
Three rows ahead of me, there was a guy in a Jared Kelnick.
There were three
like,
rows between you and
there were
the...
not three rows.
Talking
Stop
about
it.
Well, in the first
Stop.
Row?
I mean, so it was crazy. That part was crazy. There are a couple of things that stand out about Jared Kelnick. One that everyone's talking about, the positive side. He plays so hard all the time, every second. Defense, offense, approaching it. You see his eyes, like his eyes get about seven times larger. It's like the Grinch's heart when he realizes Christmas is good. Like he's just, it's insane how giant his eyes get when the ball is coming by.
What Caitlin was talking about was his 1980s tight baseball pants.
Very,
and
very
his
tight.
Large legs.
Yeah.
Very
it's
large.
Like, you know, I'm ogling as well, Caitlin. That makes two of us. Because this guy looks good.
Yeah.
He is filling out that uniform.
He looks good in the uniform.
He looks like he's going to do something dangerous.
Did you remind Caitlin he's only 21?
Yes. Hey, easy now.
Hey. Yeah. Eyes off.
You'd have been babysitting him, all right?
Yeah, no. Seriously. He was... And coupled with the fact that what percentage of people are at their first game in 2 years,
right.
They're already like adrenaline flowing. Here comes Jared Kelnick batting leadoff, so you get right to it. The buzz was palpable.
That's cool.
His confidence. You think you hear his confidence in his interviews. You think you see it on TV.
Does he walk like you do?
He walks as though there are people behind him picking things up that he drops. Like, that's how he walks everywhere he goes.
Like, people are throwing rose petals before
yes,
him?
Yes, like somebody, like, he is like dropping rose leaves. Petals, and people behind him are picking them up and putting them in a basket.
Prince Jared.
It's insane.
I love it.
He's talking up the umpires before the at-bats. He gave a hat tip after his home run. Like he gave, I couldn't believe it. He came out and gave a hat tip.
So they didn't,
call him.
Was anybody else a little bothered? I was hoping they would ignore him after the home run. I was hoping everyone would do the
dugout.
Yeah,
pretend
the dugout.
Didn't
like,
see it.
Didn't see it. I was really hoping that they would do that to him because he's the perfect kid.
Excuse me. Who? Who would have set that up in the dugout?
Tom Murphy.
Seager?
Any number of people. They could have done that. Anybody could have done that. That would have been great. Yes. It's too bad. But whatever. What are you going to do? Brock, what do you think? So the kid's here.
Yep.
What he's stands out?
Is he not Iceman? Is he not Val Kilmer? As far as you know, the hair, just the cockiness. As I watched him walk up, and we have seen him numerous times. We've been on his websites. We've watched this now for a couple of years. It's been coming. And for some reason, I don't know, I just could see him chomping on his, you know, just talking smack already as an absolute rookie, but doing it not in a Jesus Montero way, right? Jesus Montero did the same things. Did he not, Howdy? Did he not talk to the ump and hit the catcher's shin guards with his bat? Like, what are you doing? And then run like a turtle to first base.
Like he would run like he was mad at the ground. He was like stomping on it. Like, you've done it again.
He ran like he was trying to do a Molina impression.
And
like
you
he
got
to be
so mad at me, Salk. It was early. Granted, it was early. And my baseball knowledge was novice at best. But I remember sitting. I was offside making that point somewhere. We were doing the show. I was remotely. And I made that point, and you just tore me to shreds. I don't need him to run. He doesn't need to be an athlete.
He doesn't.
You know, as far as the catcher goes, you're largely right. But to be that young and that unfit and that unathletic was just so striking. And this guy is 180, the exact opposite, right? All I can picture is what the strength coach told me years ago. This dude, one-legged, squats 400 pounds. The reason he fills out those legs is because he eats the weight room. He eats the weights. Like, he genuinely loves it.
The Watt brothers work out at his gym. Like, he works out with the Watt brothers.
All right, but none of those are the reason he's a good baseball player. We're going to talk to Jeff Passan later, and we've already recorded the interview while we're talking now, so I know what we're going to talk about. Willy Mopeña is the strongest human being I've ever seen on a baseball field.
But was he an athlete?
Yes, he was an athlete.
He was an athlete? He could run?
Fast. He wasn't maneuverable, but he could. Right. He was fast. Yes.
Yes.
Dude, he couldn't play baseball. Could not play baseball.
Yes.
It's funny, he was watching the Tigers in town, and Miguel Cabrera's never been a good athlete.
Yep.
One of the best hitters of all time. He's going to get to 300 hits. He won a triple crown. You know, you're watching Albert Pujols.
Edgar Martinez.
3,000 hits, excuse me.
Okay.
He's going to get to 300.
Great athlete. I could just hit.
Yeah, so I don't buy any of that. I
well,
appreciate
that's fine.
It.
I just, that's
but
what
this
I
kid
that's
does
what
bring the
say.
Athleticism. Yes. And what I love about it, and I think what is going to be the biggest game changer for the Mariners, is the buzz he provides, not just by being a great player, but by having some of this attitude, man. The Mariners have never been known for having a winning culture. It's part of it. They've never had a true winning culture here, other than in a couple of short years. You may have heard about one of them. I don't know, occasionally somebody will mention
2001.
Yeah, that one. Right, yeah. They've never really had a long, consistent culture of what it means to be a Mariner. And I think that's what we've talked about for the last few years, that Scott Servais has worked on trying to build. And I think they're ready for him. I think that they've built the clubhouse to be ready to handle Jared Kelnick. And when he comes up with all of that toad and all of that, you know, arrogance that in a good way that Howdy was talking about, they're ready for it.
Okay.
And this could be the thing, hopefully, to change what it means to be a Mariner.
Yes, fantastic swing. Love him getting the second. Love his hustle, his effort, his grit, his edge, all of that. You just said something there that I had not thought of, kind of sparked my mind a little bit. Is the Seattle Mariners clubhouse and organization ready to bring Jared Kelnick in the exact same way as the Seahawks team was ready to welcome in Russell Wilson?
I think you've got the wrong guy. I don't think it was Russell Wilson that they were. Because Kelnick to me is not Russell Wilson. Kelnick's got so much more of the Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch to him, right? Like, he's the culture changer. He's the guy who dictates what you're going to be for the next few years. Russell's the player. He's the one you need to get over the top. And there may be another. I mean, Julio may end up being that guy. I don't know. We'll see. Although I think even he's got more personality than that. But to me, Kelnick with just the cockiness, isn't that a Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch more type of characteristic?
Yeah. Who was the last Mariner to have that? Because even an Ackley, right? Even a Montero.
Even an Ackley. Not even... Ackley didn't even have it a little.
No.
Felix at some point?
Brett Boone is the only one that I've heard that Brett Boone, when that 2001 team, that kind of attitude and that sort of bravado, the brashness, the I don't care what you think, I don't care who you are.
Adrian Beltre didn't have, and that's not to say he doesn't have other very good qualities. He's a winning baseball player with a winning baseball personality, but he is not that kind of a leader. I don't know that the Mariners have ever truly had a guy with this style. I mean, obviously Griffey had his own style, but he wasn't the leader of that team. Does this kid have more Buehner than anything else?
If Buehner and Griffey had a baby, it would be Jared Kelnick.
Well, that'd be, I mean, a strange baby, that's for sure. trucks, and backwards hats. Like, I don't. It's a very weird baby.
Sorry. That was weird. I apologize. You can dump that. Yeah. You can cut that out of the podcast.
Cut that right out. Yeah, we don't need that here. But I think in terms of personality, Brock, I think there could be some of that, don't you?
Yes. And it's funny because I wish we could still interact with Scott the way that, you know, we used to, and even more so, even when we used to do it every day and be at the stadium with him once, what, every home stand on a day game or whatever. I just would be so fascinated to see just on a daily basis how he's managing that. It's got to feel at times, and Salk, you're going to get here soon enough of raising teenagers, that you just like, man, what am I going to get? How is this going to go? How am I going to handle this?
You mean just the unpredictability of their moods?
How is the rest of the family going to handle this? How am I going to just, you know, continue to mold, but I don't want it to, like, I want them to be there.
This kid was a teenager 2 years ago.
In service?
No. The one who's 21, Brock, not service.
Kelnick. No, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
I said he was a teenager just 2 years ago.
Correct.
Yeah.
So for service to be sitting there, and as we said last week, like this is the single biggest, for me, this is like the single biggest experiment and the single biggest, like, he's got to make this work. Mm-hmm. And he should, and it should fit beautifully with Scott's skill set. Mm-hmm. Like, it, you know, this is what he is equipped to do. And he has raised Scott teenagers and himself. And so he's been through that. But I would love like a diary, just an audible diary as service leaves T-Mobile and drives home and just spends 2 minutes on an audible diary every night. Like, oh, Jared, well, where do I start here today? Right? Because I think it would fascinating audiobook.
Dear Diary, today Jared came in a little too excited, decided to tap Angel Hernandez, the umpire, on the shins, and immediately had four bad calls go against him and the team.
Yes.
Dear Diary, today Jared Kelnick went 3-for-4 with 2 doubles and a home run. Everyone loved the home run, but what I got excited about was the hustle on the second double. Yes. Dear Diary, Kelnick's gone 0-for-4 the last 2 days. I think he might break a bat in half. Dear Diary, today Mitch Haniger got so annoyed with Jared Kelnick that he looked like, all right, that didn't happen. But I'm sure there's going to be some moments like that. I'm sure there will be some days where he drives guys crazy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But I think that, A, they respect the talent. And B, more importantly, they respect the hustle and the work and the drive and all that competitiveness. And if you put those two things together, this kid's not far off from really, really being something that's going to take them to the next level. And in the meantime, Julio Rodriguez is just crushing high A. He's done there. I mean, like, he's got home runs like 6 of 7 games. Like, get him out of Everett. Get him to Arkansas. And once he's in Arkansas, he can be here. Mm-hmm. You realize that.
Yep.
I mean, he can go to Tacoma after that, but once if he does what he's doing at Arkansas, what he's currently doing to Everett, I mean, he's here. He's here.
This year?
I'm not saying he will be here,
but
this
he
year.
Could
yeah,
be.
He could
I'm
be
saying
here
if
this
he
year.
Does to Arkansas in Double A what he's currently doing to High A, what are you waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
This is September.
For the trade deadline to get rid of Haniger. about your only option.
Yeah, and I don't know that they'll do that either. So, I think that you know, look, this is the way it's supposed to be. This is what we've been waiting for.
Yep.
This is what all of the delayed gratification was all about, waiting for this. And it all finally got started over last week, and we get a chance to keep watching it. And thankfully, they didn't get no hit in his debut, which is what looked like was going to happen.
Ooh.
Really would have been a rough way to start, but... it's been pretty cool. I missed a lot of this weekend.
You guys haven't been able to talk to service as much, but some of the show has apparently been on his mind.
Wait, what's the deal with that?
Oh. He's been going out of his way to talk about Howdy.
Do we have sound of
like,
that?
He's like trying to find Howdy.
Do you think Service heard Howdy from the Diamond Club the other night?
Is that what brought this on?
Do you think that's part of it? That he just saw how obnoxious he was in his bro tank?
Did you razz Service from the Diamond Club?
I may have said some things that I may not have.
Oh, no.
I probably should regret a little bit, but you know, I'm not going to hide from Scott Service. I never have.
Well, that's not true. You've been hiding from him for 2 years.
He's been hiding from me.
You invented a fake pandemic so that you wouldn't have to go down to Arizona and take BP off.
I went to Arizona. Drove to
and
the complex.
You went bowling instead because you were hiding from him.
Please.
So he called you out?
He called him out pregame Friday in his scrum with the media at large.
Why?
I don't know why, but he's saying, hey, well, I know I'm still waiting on Howdy. He's still dodging me. He's still ducking me.
Did somebody ask him about that? Or did it just, he brought it up?
He's on his mind.
You're telling me that Jared Kelnick's coming up this week along with Logan Gilbert, and all Scott Service can think about is Howdy?
Boy, Howdy.
It must just be arrogance on his mind.
Now, Ryan Divish is tweeting about it, trying to get it like day after day. Here's Service. Think about plunking Howdy.
You know, maybe this is the time that I should... let you know that I'm starting a startup company.
I first
actually, to start the startup company, I secured some rent. It's free though.
Okay.
It's in Scott Service's head.
What a setup. All right. Well, so he's calling out Howdy for BP purposes. Is that right? Are you having trouble finding the sound over there?
I've never heard this sound. I just have people tweeting at me all over the place.
Do we have sound of it, or are we just talking about this?
It's not in the system anywhere.
All right. Well, then it's not important. Forget all that. Let me. I do want to play you one other piece of sound. Then I got a quick story that I want to tell you, and then we'll talk to Jeff Passan, and then we get some football to talk. Jeez. And some questions for Rox. There's a lot, kind of a lot on this. Kind of lost in the whole Jared Kelnick debut was the debut of Logan Gilbert. We didn't really get to talk about him last week, and I do want to mention it. I know he didn't have like a super stellar debut, right? 4 innings, 4 runs. He was good, not great. Obviously, the final numbers weren't good at all. Gave a couple home runs. Don't forget to be excited about where Logan Gilbert's going. And as much as you know, you can learn a lot, as you said, Brock, from listening to guys like Scott Service talk about the kids, but. The person I was excited to hear from was Terry Francona, because I've heard him so many times over the years and the way he talks about guys that he knows are going to be good. And so when I heard this, I figured, okay, this is probably worth playing.
But I can see why they really like the kid. I mean, he's got some length to his – it looks like he's stepping on you when he lets the ball go. There's a lot to like.
I've heard enough of Tito over the years. When he has a line like that, like where he's noticed something, like it looks like he's stepping on you when he lets the ball go, yep. That's a pretty powerful image.
Yep. I love the command, right? And we've got some pitchers on the staff that really struggle with that, I think, game in and game out, and we'll see with Logan. But that to me, I think jumps out. I know Passan's going to speak to Kirby a little bit, in that same regard. Mm-hmm. And when you've got that, it's kind of like accuracy, Mike. And you could tell me I'm wrong. And you could say, no, Brock, again, very poor football to baseball comparison.
I don't think so at all. It's a good one.
But, when it comes to just command, you could see some kids, even at a young age, that naturally have it, that are naturally accurate. And then you see those that just don't. And can it be developed? Did Randy Johnson come here with very poor wild man command and hone that in over the course of
his career? He had control issues. I mean, like, his problem was control.
Yes.
Right? And then eventually he learned to both control and command. I mean, but your point is, I think this kid's got it.
I think he does. I think, I love that the 5 strikeouts to, I think, just the 1 walk. He did give up a couple home runs that he left in the middle of the plate that you can do at every level he's been except this one. Even with velo in the middle of the plate will get damaged, and it did. But yeah, I kind of dug everything. I thought the Mariners were first class about it. It was cool to see Kelnick's family there. It was cool to see Logan's family there. It was awesome for them to have that dream come true experience. And now you got to go out and earn it. Now you got to go out and prove it, right? It's all celebration. It's all celebratory. It's Howdy yelling in the Diamond Club. And then the reality of the grind begins, and you become a professional with huge expectations on you. But I would say, just first glimpse, kind of watching it, my first feeling was, yeah, this guy's got command. And as Tito said, at 6'7", he is on top of you as he delivers.
Have you ever, just because he's been so good this year, I mean, watching Shohei Ohtani and everything that he's done.
It's not human.
It's crazy. I mean, his ERA is just above 2. He's leading the league. I mean, hitting home run. I mean, like, it's just
100 miles an hour.
Home runs and falls at his eyeballs.
It's unreal.
Yes.
How would things be different if he had signed here?
Oh. Was that close?
Of course it was. What do you mean, was it close? Well, I mean, like,
they tried.
Did we have our hearts ripped out of our chest? I know, when, like,
so that came, that was before the Cano deal, right? I mean, that was long before they traded for Kelnick and this, that, and the other. I wonder how things would have played out, because he still would have gotten hurt, and every Mariners fan would have collectively, you know, gone into hiding.
Same old Mariners.
Right? Sign this terrible guy. No, he stinks.
So
he would have gotten all that, right? But then he would have come back. Like, assuming the rest of his, everything would have gone the same for him, which I don't know if it's fair to assume that, but it's all we've got. So since it's a hypothetical, would they have still torn it all down while he was, while that had happened, or would they have kept Cano? Like, so would you now have Shohei Ohtani, but a suspended and untradeable Robbie Cano? Edwin Diaz, no Kelnick? Like, it's like a weird, wild universe.
But I do think that they would have they would have finished the rebuild a year faster.
Do you think they still?
That's what I think.
Think they still would have dealt Cano?
Yeah, I think they would have dealt Cano
with
Diaz.
They could have. Maybe they could have.
And then I think that they wouldn't have signed Kikuchi, and then they would have fast forwarded the rebuild one more year, and last year would have been the year that they started adding pieces.
Interesting.
That's what I think.
I was considering it the other day, like, what kind of a weird hypothetical universe, you know, sliding doors situation would it be if he had chosen to come to Seattle, and you'd gone through first the injury and the downturn, and now we're getting, he's the coolest thing going. I mean, he's one of the coolest things in sports right now, isn't he?
Incredible. And how bad are the Angels to have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and be this
so
bad? How's that possible?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I guess it's obviously pitching. It just speaks to, you know, the need for pitching and pitching and pitching and developing prospects and everything else. I know they finally were able to move on from Pujols, but my goodness gracious, you have two of the most talented guys on planet Earth playing on your team, and you still are near the cellar of your division. Yeah. Just amazing.
So, quick story for you. So, I didn't get to see a lot of what happened over the weekend because I went to Orange County to go visit a friend of mine, play some golf, okay? So, it was a three-day golf trip.
Jeez.
Yeah, my friend Vinay, and then
gosh,
he
you
lived.
And Howdy living. How about these two, Kyle?
I know.
Howdy. Wow.
Yeah, we're living the good
Howdy's
life.
Howdy's in the Diamond Club. Salk's on these golf adventures.
Yeah,
what are we doing?
I was in my trailer at Sun Country RV Resort. What the heck?
So let me give you some details, though. So I had planned this trip for, I think it was October, something like that. I was going to go down there in the fall when the weather was lousy here. And it's Orange County, right? It's beautiful there. It rained so hard the weekend I was going to go that we canceled the trip. I was like, we'll just postpone it till the spring. Like, okay. It hadn't rained in Orange County basically since then until I went down there this weekend.
Bad omen, Mike.
Rained on Sunday. So while it was 75 and beautiful here in Seattle, it was like 58, 60 and like
Marine
drizzly down in Southern California.
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you let me and Kyle and Howdy know, and maybe the audience on the podcast,
yeah,
when you're going to leave town? Because every time you leave town, it's beautiful.
Yeah, or the Seahawks win a Super Bowl, one or the other.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I go down there. All right, so first day we're going to play around. It's Vinay and my best friend Nate and a really good friend of mine, this guy Tom, came down. And we played it at Vinay's Country Club.
Riviera. Awesome.
It is not Riviera. It's called the Mission Viejo Country Club. It's very nice.
That's great.
First of all, Kikuya grass rock.
Ooh.
In the rough.
Thick stuff, dude.
What did you say?
That Kikuya.
It's like down in Hawaii.
Yes.
You just can't get out of the
dude,
rough.
Dude, it's impossible.
So hard.
That's
so
how you
hard.
Break your wrist.
But we get down there. Vinay right now is like, he's obsessive. He's obsessed with golf. So he wanted to get there an hour and a half early to really work first on his chipping, then on his putting, then on the range. That, like,
what does that leave you to do? Like, get some lunch?
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. Tom and I got a chicken salad melt while Vinay was working on whatever it was he was working on. He's taping up his wrists.
Oh, no.
Dude, it's intense.
That's bad. There's people at that course that are making fun of him.
Dude, he's also doing Bryson math on the green.
He better be really good. He better shot scratch.
Compass, protractor.
He's sitting there going like, okay, so 50, he'll walk the putt to say, okay, 15 feet, it looks like it's 2 inches of break per foot, so, and it's 45 downhill playing 60. Like,
he got a Bryson pace of play issue,
yes,
too?
Oh, yes, he definitely
does. Yeah, it sounds like that.
He's also like, he's shooting around, you know, between 85 and 90, but really worried about cuts versus draws constantly. Dude, it's so funny. I love it. It's so fun to play with him. Anyway, here's the thing. So we get to the first tee, and there's people all around, right? And the
starter?
Yeah, no, there's like a restaurant, like open air patio right behind the first tee.
Pressure.
So there's tons of people watching. Everybody tees off. And my driver had not been, I had not been hitting my driver well. But I was like, okay, I hit it okay in the range. I'm going to take driver off the first tee. And so I take a driver swing, and I'm trying to go inside out. Instead, I go outside in. I hit the ball. Now, thankfully, as I'm in my backswing, some member comes down the cart path right behind me and screeches his brakes.
Oh, so you got plausible deniability.
The ball I hit comes out low and left, like real low and real left. Hits a rock, a giant rock, shoots straight back, misses the guy in his cart by not very much, and I thought it was legitimately going to land in the restaurant.
Oh, no.
Thankfully, it does not. But I just, I mean, I was white as a ghost. I was ashen. Like,
I'm just going to drop down there. I think I'll just drop. Like, let's just go.
I couldn't because everyone's like, well, he screeched in your
backswing.
Oh, no. Oh, good. Oh, you got the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, now you got a hit again.
Yeah, he screeched in my backswing.
The way my leg was.
Oh, my God. I was so embarrassed. So, thankfully, I was not fourth. I was third of the group to hit. So, I was like, hey.
You go.
Tom, you go. I'm going to collect myself for a moment back by the cart. And so, I took out four hybrid.
Yeah.
And what do you think happened on the next one?
Striped it right down the middle.
Thankfully. Yes, I was so embarrassed.
I was
I don't know if I've ever been that embarrassed on a golf. So just to quickly fast forward, I know I'm not going to tell golf stories all day, but I think you guys would like this. So we play three rounds in 3 days, and at the end of this, Vinay and I are like, hey, my flight's not till 5:30. We can get another nine in. Okay. So we go to this dirt track. There's construction going on.
Yeah.
There's dogs walking on the course.
Whoa.
There's like there every green is everything is temporary. It was the worst golf course I've ever played at. But we get hooked up.
And it's why it was $12.99 for 18.
It was still $50. Thanks a lot, Orange County.
Oh, gosh.
So we get hooked up with these two dudes, and this one guy's got the full backswing. Do you know what I mean? Where it comes back behind his ears.
Hideo Nomo.
It's nuts. And he's not very sprinting all over, but we get to 10. And there's a fence. Like, there's a giant net because there's houses on the left. He goes around the net as hard as that you can hit a golf ball directly into somebody's house.
Whoa. It threw a window into a house?
It went into their balcony, rattled back and forth like, oh, my God.
Whoa! Whoa! We got to go.
I couldn't hit after it. I was so rattled.
What a harrowing golf experience.
Dude, it was insane. Everywhere I went, there was calamity.
Goodness gracious.
Yes, that's what I experienced down there. Dude, that first tee shot, don't let that happen. Especially
that's a pressure shot.
The private club? I was really worried.
As a guest at the private club.
I know. Like they're going to throw Vinay out or something and not let him play there. So anyway, we're coming up on graduation, Brock. So you know, graduation special for Famous Dave's. Let me
this week, Mahala. Yeah, we have our graduation party Friday night now.
Yeah. How many people with that?
How many? What are we going to have? I don't know as far as the number of kids that'll be coming over.
We got grandparents coming out.
Oh yeah, grandparents are both sets of grandparents coming. Yeah. Got some in-laws, sister-in-law, some nephews, some nieces. So, yeah, it's going to be a good size party.
What do you get someone for graduation these days? Like, what's a graduation gift?
Cash.
You just give her cash?
Just cash.
Amazon card.
Straight cash.
You gave your daughter cash?
Oh, I don't know. No, I'm not giving my daughter cash. But just
what do you give her?
I think that's the go-to.
What do you give her?
I don't think the parents give you anything.
What do you mean? You give her something.
You got, like, something ready for college. Like, you know.
You got to give her. Are you going to get her a gift, Brock?
We're going to do a nice family vacation.
Oh, that's a pretty
really
good
nice
gift.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Really nice.
Yes.
Oh.
Not just saying.
Well, I'm going to hear a little bit more about this
hold on.
At some point. We would do that off air. Okay. Anyway, with graduation going on, Famous Dave's can take care of the whole graduation party experience. Right now, a new grad catering special starts at just $10 a person, so you can do it very affordably. Here's the options. You ready? For $10, as I mentioned, you can go Georgia chopped pork.
Of course.
Of course. Barbecued pulled chicken sliders and a choice of two sides. Add just $2 a person, so not a huge upgrade here, but $12 a person. Georgia chopped pork.
Yes.
Barbecued pulled chicken sliders.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
add traditional chicken wings and two sides.
Okay.
$14 a person.
$14. I think this is the one I'm going for.
Yeah, I think.
Do I get ribs at 14?
Yeah, you're going to get ribs. Swap out ribs for chicken wings. Still have the two sides. That's probably the money move right there for $14. Famous Dave's also offering box meals. Just ask one of the catering experts for more details. We know how good the barbecue is. It's authentic. The pitmasters get up at what time, Kyle?
4 a.m.
4 a.m. each day. They hand rub the meats with fresh spices. They cook them, slow cook them to perfection. That's why they've won more than 700 awards. Famous Dave's, locations in Everett, Seattle, Tukwila, Tacoma, and
the Ghost Kitchen. Woo! Spooky, scary skeletons.
That's in Northgate. For more info, go to famousdaves.com/catering. Leave the barbecuing to the best. Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue.
Jeff Passan, the wet blanket, raining on parades, harsh and buzzes all day.
They're going to have bad years coming up.
Jeff Passan, the wet blanket.
There he is, our friend, the one and only wet blanket, Jeff Passan, joining us here on the podcast. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, I missed that song so much.
I bet you did. Are you here to tell us that Kelnick's going to be bad?
I am not going to be a wet blanket today. How does that sound?
That sounds actually pretty great. Tell us what's on your mind. So Kelnick obviously is the big story, and I got some other stuff to ask you about. But starting with what has been, he just put so much buzz in the park this past weekend, and I know he's really only had one good game, but what we've seen from him just gets people excited. What's the future for Jared Kelnick?
Star, and that's nice to hear with the Seattle Mariners team. That's had issues rearing such types of players. But Jared Kelnick is as legitimate as everyone believes he's going to be. And the fact that the Mariners have him for the next 7 years, it's just one of those things where if you have a guy who is at that level, you can build around him. And he is that type of franchise tentpole around whom a championship-type team can be built. And I'm not saying the M's are there. There's a lot left to do, but it's a really, really good place to start. And when you see him and Logan Gilbert debuting the same day, when you know Julio Rodriguez and Cal Raleigh and Emerson Hitchcock are on their way as well, and George Kirby, I mean, there's just a lot of talent there right now. And not all of them are going to work out. Not all of them are going to be stars. But I think there's enough high-end talent there where even if a couple of them don't turn out to be what you were hoping for necessarily, it's still enough where if they go out and sign the right types of free agents, they're going to be in a fantastic position.
Why does the wet blanket feel so strongly about Kelnick?
I'm just listening to what evaluators tell me. And they think that his swing is built for power, that it's built for average, that he's got a good eye at the plate, that all the tools are there for him to be that frontline type player. And look, guys like that miss. That's just a reality of sports, but they don't miss very often. When you see someone who has been as productive as he's been at the ages he's been productive, that's the big part about it. I mean, he's 21 years old, and he's excelled everywhere he's been. So there's no reason yet to believe that he's not going to do the same even at the highest level.
Obviously, you see the talent, and it's on display anytime he's out there. The other thing that you hear so much about with him is, I don't know what you call it, attitude, hustle, competitiveness, sort of all of those intangibles thrown in together. I know that the trend in baseball is to go away from some of the intangibles and focus on more measurable qualities. But if you're the Mariners and you are not just seeking to get, you know, good again, but really to change the culture and reputation of your ball club, how important is Kelnick to that change?
Mike, I think that the intangibles here almost inform the talent. I think that Jared Kelnick is as good as he is in part because he believes he's that good. When he walks onto a field, there is no intimidating him. There is no telling him, I'm better than you, because he just does not believe that. And belief is so much of the game, especially in baseball, in a sport where you're prone to having an 0-for-4 night with three strikeouts. If you still believe in yourself and you still believe in your level of talent, you're going to be able to shrug that off and come back out the next day and, you know, hit a homer and two doubles. And we've seen that from him already this early in his career, and it's something that I think is going to be sustained for a while.
Will you be writing about the Seattle Mariners in 2021?
At some point, sure. Like, are we talking like a deep dive? Is that what you're looking for, Brock?
You mean 21 or 22, Brock?
Well, I'm just saying, you crowned Vogelbach last year in April, May, the Mariners. I think you were in Kansas City. They were like 16-4. And then you wrote their death sentence. You know, it was from there just a downward spiral. So I'm just curious, in 21, with 121 games to go, are we going to have a passing article or not?
So are you blaming me for the Mariners sucking a couple years ago after I wrote about Vogelbach?
Yeah. Nope. Nope,
yeah. Yes, he is.
Why would you infer that? Haven't talked to you in months, Passan.
Why did you imply that?
Brock's at Fox now. He's a lot of ESPN rivalry. Like, don't worry about it, Jeff. You don't have to take that kind of grief from him. Let me ask you a little more.
I'm not going to take that kind of grief from him. Unbelievable.
Let me ask you a little more broadly, because
hold on a second. I come in here talking about being positive, and you pull that?
Yeah, I don't like
it. What you're doing to me?
Yeah, I don't. We don't bring you on to be Mr. Positive. You're the wet blanket. All right.
There is truth to that.
Yes.
Jeff, you ever hear the phrase that when you open a can of Coke, you expect it to taste like Coke? Like, we opened Coke today and got Sprite. We don't know what to make of this. You're all happy and shiny. You mentioned the offseason. Tell me what you expect. First of all, what do the Mariners need to do this offseason to add to this group? And what would be out there that would be a realistic possibility for them?
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see among those young but not very young guys who they buy into. And mainly, I'm looking at like J.P. Crawford and Dylan Moore. And Dylan Moore had a great 2020 season. He's had some struggles this year. You know, he's got power still. He is very good on the base paths. He can draw a walk, but you just can't be hitting 172. You can't do that and maintain full-time at bats. And J.P. Crawford is a guy who has seemingly all the talent in the world, and at times you look at him and you're like, this is the shortstop of the future. But when you have a free agent class that includes Javier Baez and Carlos Correa and Trevor Story and Corey Seager, all of a sudden, you can start dreaming a little bit. And if you can put a franchise-type shortstop in the same lineup as an outfield that includes Kyle Lewis and Jared Kelenic and Mitch Haniger, if you know somebody like Ty France can step up and be that DH that you're looking for, it's just a matter of those mid to late 20s guys, and which of them do you trust and which of them are you going to replace? And I think they also probably need another top-end starting pitcher. I know that Flexen's been very good this year. Justin Dunn's, I'm not going to say been surprisingly good, but it has been pleasant to see what he's done, despite the fact that he's walking way too many guys. Marco Gonzalez is going to be there. You know, is Justin Sheffield a guy long-term upon whom you can depend? Where did you say Kikuchi fit into this whole thing?
Where does he fit, by the way? Where does Yusei, would you extend Yusei Kikuchi based on what you've seen? Because they're going to have to make that call at the end of this year, whether or not they want him around. Would you want Yusei? $15 million a year?
I was just going to say, what's the price?
It's 15. I believe the contract calls for it to be 15 a year if they
exercise. I think it's actually even higher than that. I think it's like 16 and a half.
Okay.
I think it's 18.
It's a lot of money.
I think it's 18.
It might be 20. By the time we get done here, it could be $35 million. Who the heck knows?
No. At that price, I would not. Especially when there are going to be other options out there. And when you've got, I'm not going to say Kirby is on the cusp quite yet, but George Kirby's a really interesting guy. His hallmark has been his command and his control. Like, he just does not walk guys. And when I look at someone like him who has maintained his great control and added significantly to the stuff, I'm not saying he's going to be Shane Bieber. But what I'm saying is there is an archetype for that type of guy who's always had his hallmark be his ability to throw strikes, and then his stuff jumps up a tick or two, and he turns into a real guy. I'm also, guys, not going to come out and say that I think the Mariners should go buck wild in free agency this upcoming offseason. I don't know that now is the time. It almost feels like after next year would be the right time to start pushing a little bit more all in. You know, Rodriguez is probably not going to be up this year. We're looking more at 2022 for him.
You say that, Jeff, but look at those shortstops you mentioned. I mean, like, if they're not in on one of those shortstops you mentioned, like, you've got to go get one of try at least to get one of those guys.
Yes. What I think what I mean more than that is going and getting a shortstop, a starter, a reliever, and, you know, a bat.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that they should go full bore. If you can get a shortstop, get a shortstop, 100%. But in terms of completely turning over the roster this offseason, I don't think they're at that point quite yet. And I think patience, it would be a virtue for this team.
Jeffrey, I have one last question for you. Is the Mendoza family the only name and family out there celebrating what's happening in baseball? Just praying that all of us, praying that all of a sudden, you know, there's no longer a Mendoza line as everybody's hitting around 200?
I was going to say there needs to be like a, if somebody, it needs to be the Mathis line now for Jeff Mathis, and it needs to be like 180. Because that's more representative of where baseball is right now. And that is, to me, a very problematic thing. I think it's indicative of what you see around the game right now and its greatest problem, which is a lack of action. Because when there are balls in play and there is action, the talent is unrivaled in history. I just think baseball players now are more talented than they have ever been. And that's because of training, and that's because of our knowledge of how the game works, and it's because of technology. All of those things have combined to make these uber players, and even to make an average player a person who would have been a star in the past. It's just the ball's not in play. It's even worse in the minor leagues now, guys. I think I read something, I think it was J.J. Cooper from Baseball America, said a day or two ago that right now 41% of plays in the minor leagues are either walks, strikeouts, or home runs. Mm. That is like an entire minor leagues turning into Adam Duff.
Mm.
It's staggering to see how baseball is shifting and is changing, and what the consequences of the great pitchers who are around these days and the hitters who have tried to adjust the only way that they either know or have been taught, which is, if we're not going to be able to string together three or four singles in a row because getting a hit is so hard, then the consequence of that is we need to put runs up in a different way, which is more home runs. And all that does is end up in this feedback loop where when you have guys trying to hit home runs, more strikeouts happen. And it's just, it's a very difficult cycle to break.
I think you should be a little more positive on that. Yes, they may look like Adam Dunn, but at least they don't look like an entire minor leagues full of Austin Kearns or Willie Mopenas. I mean, like, that seems like it could be worse, right? If you just go back to your Reds outfield of 15 years ago.
Wow. That is a deep cut right there, Mike Salk.
Willie Mopena once hugged me and nearly broke my back. It was one of the most painful, like, that dude is so big and so strong. He should not have been playing baseball.
I wrote a very long story on Willie Mopena about just the legend that guy is. He's a super nice dude and was incredibly talented and could not hit a baseball. But when he did, good God, did it fly a long way.
Great dude, too. I mean, like, truly one of the nicest people I've met in the game. All right, this is not a Willie Mopena podcast. Last question for you, Jeff, and then I know you got to run. The future of the Mariners is what? Fill in the blank.
Ascendant.
Meaning it's on the rise and you believe it will get there?
That's what ascendant means.
Well, I was trying to help out our audience because I don't know that everybody knows that word. We're not all coastal. We're not all Kansas City coastal elites like you,
ever heard
Jeff.
Of Tacoma and Olympia.
So you believe that they're on the right track?
I think everyone in Puyallup knows exactly what I'm saying.
Jeff, thank you. Seriously, it's good to talk to you. And congrats. Nice work on breaking all the Mariners news last week as well. It was great to see your name out there. I know you break plenty of stories, but it was great to see you involved in a few Mariners stories as well. So thank you. Always great to talk to you, man.
I am very glad that the Mariners are newsworthy. Like, I'm serious. Like, that's the takeaway from this, right? Like, the Mariners have news that is worth reporting. And that is a new thing and something that I think is here to stay.
Yeah, and I think we'll all be waiting to see the Julio Rodriguez promotions as well, because I think he may be a little too rich for high A where he is right now. That league is not enough for him. So we're looking forward to watching all of this ascend, the ascension of the Mariners with Jeff Passan. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Take it easy.
Hey, wanted to talk some football with you, Brock. It's kind of been on our list for the last few weeks to do some around the NFL. And there's a bunch of NFL stories kind of coming together that I wanted to ask you about specifically. And I want to start with this whole, like, boycott thing. Can you explain what's going on first, and then we can kind of delve into why? What exactly is happening?
Well, the J.C. Treader, the president of the Players Association, put out a salvo a couple months ago saying we really don't need off-season work. That if anything we learned in this pandemic, we all love Zoom meetings and can do everything online, and the level of play didn't really dip. So why don't y'all just cancel the whole offseason, OTAs, all that nonsense. Guys don't need to get together, and we'll see you for training camp in late July, early August. So that was the kind of salvo, I think, from the very top of the Players Association. A few followed along. You saw actually a bunch of the organizations try to stand together on that. I think some 22 of the 32 teams kind of put out little PSAs on Twitter saying, yep, we stand by the union and we're going to, protect our health in the off season. And they first tried to kind of use COVID, is it that we don't feel there's safe practices, yada, yada, yada. And well, it turns out that about 90% of the guys want to actually work. And Tom Brady even said, we don't need to overtrain. We don't need to work. So you have the Players Association, you have the GOATs, you have some of your superstars, but kind of like negotiating for that CBA deal that I know drew the ire of Howdy so much. You have a
He's already shaking his head.
You have
got
a
CB.
You have a structure of a league that is built in such a way is that everyone is on the clock. I shouldn't say everyone. 90% of the guys are on the clock, and they need to work to secure their job, to secure their guarantees, to secure their income, and they don't want to give their reps to anybody else.
So let me ask.
So did it surprise me that every rookie was there for the Seahawks? No, didn't surprise me in the least. And all around the league, that almost every rookie has had a rookie OTA. And phase one, okay, fine. You don't want to lift together, fine. But Juwan James tears his Achilles, okay. You train off-site, you're not protected if you get hurt the way you would be in this building. So, you got to kind of throw that into the fire
and
as well.
And by the way,
Settlement stuff is the biggest. I get it. We'll talk about that in a moment. But can I try to take the unions and players' side on this for a minute? Because I hear where you're going. You're a management guy, obviously, and you're going to say that that's ridiculous.
I'm the son of a coach guy. When you're there to work, you work. That's
understood.
Yes.
And you know me. You know how I feel about players deciding not to come to voluntary offseason
workouts.
Yeah, I
remember you ripping Golden Tate for being in
all of them. I think it's ridiculous.
Yes, yes.
So let me try to argue the other side of this for a moment. Do they need to be there? Do they need to have all these workouts? Does baseball have them? Does basketball have them? Does hockey have them? I don't know whether is there ever a time where it's not soccer season? Like, is there season in soccer?
I mean,
baseball
is January to November, October. I mean, you're like,
I understand, but like,
basketball is the same way. You're
understood.
9 months.
But no other sport has the whole off season training stuff that the NFL does. And don't they have a point that they didn't have it last year and the quality of play didn't really suffer? Couldn't they get it all done in training camp? Why do they need to do all this?
because you're young players, so some of your veterans, sure, they could do that. And yeah, I'd say
but
probably.
But no one did it last year, and the quality of the game was not bad.
I'd say probably 20% could absolutely do that. Maybe 25%. One out of four guys could absolutely show up in training camp and be just fine. Certainly the elite quarterbacks, some of the elite players that have years and years of experience, know that have the money as well, you know, to pay for trainers and to pay for chefs and
What's wrong with the other guys? What, they're walking around, they don't know where to go, they can't find the kitchen, they run the wrong route, they fall down? Like, what happens to them?
They are not nearly the same condition. They don't have nearly the same resources to train and do all of those things. They've got to try to take someone else's job. What? How much of the league turns over every year? Almost 60% per team? Right? I mean, or no, excuse me, 35% per team kind of turns over. You constantly
hold on. You're telling me that. Hold on a minute. They don't have the same resources to train.
Yes.
How much training is actually going on during the offseason workout? How much of the training goes on then?
Is it
days or weeks or months?
It's months. They start in April and they go through mid June. So May and June.
That's all mandatory.
Absolutely not. None of it is mandatory. And that was the case they tried to make, because this is all voluntary, guys. It's all voluntary. You don't have to be there. But you could voluntarily lose your job if somebody else, who, by the way, has a very similar skill set. That's the other thing, Mike. I think 60 to 70%, like the margin between guys, is not very much. You know, 25, 30%, there is a significant margin. There's a great difference between Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. There is a great difference between Geno Smith and Russell Wilson. How much of a difference is there between receivers 3 through 6 on a roster, linebackers 3 through 6 on a roster, D linemen 5 through 9 on a roster? How much of a safeties and special teamer, how much of a difference is there between players 30 through 53 on a roster? Versus 53 to 70.
So you're saying that the main reason the players' union shouldn't want shouldn't go down the road they're going down is for essentially equitable reasons, that it's allowing the rich to get richer, essentially, and the rest of the league is left behind because they don't have the resources to train the same way?
I think it's brutally difficult for young guys and undrafted guys if there was no off season to ever make a team of a Doug Baldwin and others through the years. If they had not had any offseason, no OTAs, no reps, and then you get to training
what
camp.
What if you had, so if you were the union, and I'm honestly kind of just asking questions. I'm not sure yet where I come down on this whole thing. But what if you're the union? You say, okay, look, cancel the offseason. We want our guys to be able to just get away from football and not have to have these commitments. And we will give you back a certain number of practices and time during training camp. Maybe training camp starts a week earlier and maybe there's more practices and this, that, and the other. Why would that not be a good trade for both sides?
I think that could help a little bit, but I don't think you're going to get veterans now to be even longer into training camp. They want less work.
Why can't some of this be done? I mean, if every other company in the universe is now finding new ways to operate with fewer people in the office and more on Zoom, et cetera, why can't the NFL do more of that also?
And they will, and they absolutely will. And there will be efficiencies with this that will absolutely be used, and there will probably not be as many in-person meetings. But I'll also say this, the league that I just called for the last 2 weeks, which was some of the hardest broadcast work of my life, I'm not going to lie to you, but that is their belief. I think that Fox has partnered with the Spring League in this, and their positioning is maybe eventually, Mike, maybe eventually those veterans and those guys that do want to have an entire offseason can be off. And then for all of the others on the periphery that are trying to make it, undrafted guys and others, that you have a training ground. That you have a minor league developmental system, that you truly have a you've talked about this for years and years and years, right? Hockey has junior hockey, correct? Baseball has the minor leagues, correct? Those other sports, the NBA has the G League, correct? Right? They all have developmental leagues. The NFL does not. And that is where I think
but the NFL has college football, which is essentially developmental league.
Well, the Major League Baseball has college baseball.
NBA
has
really.
College basketball.
But not really.
The NHL has college hockey. I mean, they have all of those things, right? I mean, they all have collegiate sports as well.
Fair point.
Yeah, maybe not to the extent and the level and the passion and everything else, but it's still, right? You still have that mechanism for student athletes. You have mechanisms now for pros that don't want to do that route. And that honestly is where I think Fox and the Spring League are positioning themselves pretty aggressively for the years ahead. That if this is where it's going, and there is going to be less of off seasons, and the players are going to be hurt by that, are going to be all the young, undeveloped guys, then let's put a league together in the spring for those guys to spend, in essence, 2-3 months doing some of the training that used to be done at the NFL.
It's a good point. It's a really great way of looking at it. And I think your argument here is fantastic. And as I said, I'm sort of playing some devil's advocate here.
Well done, Brock. Bravo.
The problem the Players Association ends up having here is twofold. One, the whole idea of you get injured not at one of these things and you're on NFI and you don't get your money. But that dude from the Broncos lost $32 million. Are you kidding me? Like, that should be the end of the conversation if you're a player.
But what if he was working out in July and he wasn't supposed to be at the training camp?
They probably find a way to pay him.
Yeah, so it was just like, oh, well, it was this week and you were supposed to be here, but you weren't here.
Yes, absolutely.
If you did it next week when we weren't expecting you here, then that's all
good. But you show up, if you're not here when you should be, and you lose $32 million.
By the way, I heard people say, dude, seriously, why wouldn't he be just hopped up on painkillers?
Find a way. Oh, my knee!
Walk in the building in the first stretch. Pop his Achilles.
Absolutely. Yes. $32 million?
I think I'm going to take a dive, mate. Like, do a little Justin Day. Like, hey, I think it's the vertigo. I'm going, oh, my God, my knee!
It was his Achilles. He can't really walk on your Achilles.
Sure,
he's 330
pounds. Find a way.
But if he was just so hopped up on painkillers, and he walked in there like, what's up with Juwan? I don't know.
I'm hurt. My leg.
Hey, you just do that in the weight room.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
You do a tripping coming into the facility. You just have to be
slipping
there.
In the parking
lot.
Yes. The old insurance fraud.
Absolutely. That's all you got to do. All right. Well, good points, Brock. They look bad. The players, whether they're right or not,
it's why Howdy shakes his head. I think there's wants them to be on the same page.
Howdy's shaking his head in absolute disgust.
What a joke!
That group is such a joke. NFLPA is such a joke.
Especially when you just look bad when the biggest thing you're trying to argue for is playing less.
You're picking fights
rather
you can't
than getting
win.
Paid more.
It's ridiculous.
They won
on the weed end of things, as I told Danny Collins.
Good for you.
There's no testing the weed anytime.
Right. Good job.
They got a win.
I'll tell you, the schedule came out last week, and I know it's a big day. I ever talk schedule. I can't get over the fact that there's 17 games. I can't get over it.
It's awful.
It's not just that I object to the fact that there are more games. I can kind of understand like the idea of seasons change and like I'm willing to adapt. That's fine. An odd number of games in your season?
Oh, I love that.
Is this
so
a 9
much.
And 8 team or are they an 8 and 9 team?
Oh, like, that sounds so excited horrible. For that. You guys I can't believe that you guys are not 100% on board with having an odd number of games.
No, they're going to go 7 and 10 this year. Ugh.
It's perfect.
So weird.
You will no longer have 500 teams at the end of seasons. What? You either had a good year or a bad year.
Finally!
You are a winning team or a losing team. That's a problem that did not exist.
You're living in Bart Stelton's world.
There was a third option of you were a 500 team.
Awful.
Like, man, awful. It's okay.
You're a winner or you're a loser. Getting rid of ties in sports is always a good thing. Yes.
But that's not a tie.
It's a tie.
Even record.
Was it a good year?
So are you saying baseball should go to 163?
If they could,
basketball and hockey should go to 83?
They basically did when they added the playoff play-in games. Yeah. Get out of here with your ties. No more.
They're not ties.
Yes, they are.
Since the beginning of time, every 81 league.
81 and 81. Oh, great. They tied again.
Awful. They have a good year? Meh.
Howdy, that's a bizarre take. I'm not going to get used to this for a while. Even the fact that it's like, oh, they have an extra road game? Like, what?
Hey, you getting ready for week 18? Going to be a big one.
The whole thing is
who
so
plays
strange.
Eight at home and who plays nine on the road?
I think obviously
every year,
switch
rotates.
Back and forth. But like, gosh, what is the whole, does your whole division play the same?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I doubt it.
Mm. Oh my gosh, that's messed up, man. Like the whole my mind
it's on its
not
way to 18. You're
yet.
Gonna get to 18
yeah.
games,
yeah,
eventually.
And that'll be fine. Then we'll have at least an even number, but an odd number. So strange for me. So that's what's going on with the boycott. What's going on with Aaron Rodgers? He's gonna be a Bronco, right?
I think I've heard Clayton say 52 times that his fiance is from Boulder. Have you guys heard that yet?
His fiance is what's her name,
so,
right?
Yeah.
She's the one who's in Big
Shailene
Little Lies.
Woodley.
Shailene Woodley. Mm-hmm. She was also in The Descendants.
Yeah. Right.
She's good. Yeah. She's a good actress.
Yeah. One of the lead protesters in the pipeline deal?
I think she has a place in Boulder. So that, I think, to Clayton, it's a done deal. Like, fiance's in Boulder, it's going to get done.
Okay. Well, the Broncos make the most sense, though, don't they?
No, they do. I mean, this is going to be the ultimate game of chicken. And this is going to dominate, I think, almost every headline of every day until this gets resolved. Once things really crank up, they will a little bit in OTA season. I can imagine he won't be any part of it. If he has said no to his family and to his own mom, I think he can say no to the Green Bay Packers. So that's kind of where I land on it. Not necessarily the real estate in Boulder, but this guy is, I think, holds a grudge. I think he's a cold-blooded businessman, and I think he's made the definitive decision, I want no more part of Green Bay. And if you think the heartstrings of the Packer Nation are going to be pulling at him...
He didn't care about that.
He doesn't care about that.
No.
No. So
he's like a sociopath, essentially. He doesn't care about anybody.
Brock described him on draft night as a dark artist. He's like a tortured artist. Mm. He's trying to express himself.
Really?
He reminds me
of that. When I met with him, I think I did three of their games this year.
He's more of a sociopath who just doesn't care about anybody else's emotions.
He seems a dark artist.
Okay.
He is a cerebral, dude.
Wisconsin's kind of the land of serial killers, too. That and here. Right? Mm. I mean, like Seattle and Wisconsin are like big serial killers.
So is he willing to eat how many millions? How aggressive will the Packers come back at
continuing the Jeffrey Dahmer thing in terms of what he was willing to eat.
How good is Jordan Love in these OTAs, or how terrible is he? And how much of a role does that play, and how much Green Bay may or may not acquiesce in as far as the dollars and cents?
I don't see how they. I mean, I know I saw Andrew Brandt saying that there's still a decent chance he plays with the Packers this year. I still don't see how that's possible.
What can the Broncos give up for him?
I don't know.
Like the 25th pick? Great.
Well,
I mean, you're trading a first-round pick with Aaron Rodgers. You expect he takes him to the playoffs.
Well, if Green Bay gets nothing, if Aaron just says, I'm out, retiring, sorry, I'll do Carson Palmer and you get nothing, how much leverage do they have? Right, I'll just sit out. I'll retire. I'm good. I'll go host Jeopardy and make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for the rest of my life doing that, or whatever.
I don't know that you make hundreds of millions of dollars hosting Jeopardy.
Oh, you make a lot of money.
You make hundreds of millions of dollars hosting Jeopardy.
Probably not a year, but
if you do it for the next 10, 20 years,
you only have to work 40 days a year. Yes, which is nice.
Do you see?
Film like four episodes.
I bet he makes close
day.
To $10 million a year doing that job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. You do that for 10, 20 years, rest of your life?
50 years?
Yeah, he could do that for 40 years.
Because you don't have to work 40. He could do that and, I mean, like, if it's only 40 days.
Correct.
Now that they're getting rid of the,
there's no more off-season program. Yeah, like, we just do it all in the off-season. Yeah. Be easy. Huh.
Yeah, this is going to be a game of chicken, and Green Bay did
it
a couple decades ago with Brett Favre, right?
Let me predict, he wins the game of chicken. Aaron Rodgers wins. He's already won. He can do whatever he wants. He can retire. He holds all the cards in this, don't you think?
To a degree.
He's got all the talent. He's still a great player. He's willing to not play.
Yep.
I mean, he has leverage.
That's the real question. Is he truly willing to not play?
I'll bet the house on it.
He has never once actually had to face that.
I think I know Salk's opinion on that. It happened in San Francisco.
He's already quit once.
I think I already know Salk's answer to that.
We can all assume, but... That element always will remain.
No, I think Carson Palmer showed him the way.
Yeah.
And, he quit on his team before. He'll do it again. He holds all the cards because he's kind of a sociopath. I don't mean he actually is, but, like, he's kind of got that, like, type of personality of, like,
just cold-blooded.
I don't care.
He does not care relationally.
Speak to his own mother.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to get in his business. I don't know what the heck happened. Maybe he may very well be in the right there. I don't know what's going on.
But if you want to talk about winning a game of chicken,
then
you're dealing with the wrong guy.
Which
is why, with Russell, in all of the escapades of this offseason with Russell, you're like, you're not going to do that.
No, because Russell wasn't serious about it. Like,
you're not going to take it that far. You're not willing to cut all those ties.
Mark, will you say this for me?
Mark, like, what if like, aliens come down and take over Seahawks facility and need to trade me. Which teams would I go to then? Well, okay. In that case, like, what if they put a team in Omaha? Yeah, I'd go there.
You watch 60 Minutes this week. There's aliens coming. Not far-fetched.
Really?
Yes, I mean, these aliens have arrived.
They are here.
He's interviewing dudes in the Air Force who said, we see UFOs every single day. Every day.
Wow. They have no jet propulsion. They move thousands of miles an hour.
I was just watching Independence Day, like, last week, the original. Like, you think that's what's going on?
They're off the coast, specifically the East Coast, and he said they're out there doing training missions. They see him every single day.
Did they shoot down that satellite? Is that what happened? They run into that rocket that came down?
Was that the Chinese satellite coming down?
Yeah.
How concerned?
But yeah, I would, if I had to bet, I'm sorry, I got mildly off UFOs.
<That's> A little,
at least mildly.
First of all, all these reports, like, we don't know what it is. You think the U.S. military has let information out that there are UFOs and they haven't shot one down? Come on, they've blown one up. They have it. They're looking at it. They have a lot more information.
You think it's
that.
Like Will Smith dragging that thing through the
You're
desert
telling
and his parachute
me
kicking
that
it
there's
the whole
a bunch
time,
of things flying
talking about
around
how bad he smells
in no fly zones that no one's shot down before? No, they've blown one of those things up and they brought it in.
Howdy's giving us a Jared Kelnick. Come on!
Come on!
Can I hear that one more time, please? Can I hear you yelling and ruining Maura's tape? Maura, perfect
Making
timing.
Maura's tape.
Yeah. The come on is pretty good. Not going to lie, Howdy. The more I listen to that, I kind of like it. Other than some of the obnoxiousness that obviously service didn't like, but come on's a pretty good call. Like, come on, of course.
Come on!
All right, rookie quarterbacks, Brock. That's the other thing I wanted to chat about a little bit here.
But, okay, do you have, by the way, do you have our boy Daryl Taylor on this list? In the rookie minicamp for the Seahawks, because I got a buff dude report. Like,
oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Jump right in then. Forget quarterbacks. Yeah. Let's go. Give me your buff dude report.
You didn't happen to see Seahawks Twitter this weekend amidst all of your golf rounds and see the picture of Daryl Taylor?
I did.
Do you see his legs?
I don't know.
You see every striation in his quad and hamstring, and did you see his calves? Did you look at Daryl Taylor's 250-some pounds of absolute rocked-out beast mode? Did you happen to see that?
Clearly not for as long as you
No, were. You didn't. No, you didn't. Even Aaron Curry is in the background of the picture looking at those legs. Like, he's got a face like, what? Like, I had the XFL with that running back jumping. Daryl Taylor is an unbelievable athlete. And this starts to make sense for why KJ Wright's not signed. We're all sitting there wondering, I think even, you know, a couple weeks ago in Blue 88 here on this podcast, you asked me and I just said, yeah, I think this league's younger, right? And they want faster and they want stronger and twitchier. And I think just for KJ at this stage of the game, especially at linebacker more than any position at that second level, right? You need to have guys that can flat out cover space. Mm-hmm. And to see him spend the entire weekend, and according to people that I trust that were out there watching it, really like what they saw of him at strong side linebacker. I really hope that guy stays healthy. I really hope for all the fun that I poked at him and that draft pick and that just kind of waste, unfortunately, last year through injury. I really hope that he turns into a physical, menacing, strong side linebacker that when Deebo Samuel wants to run a little end around and he catches 255 with that kind of horsepower.
Is he supposed to be a strong side linebacker, though?
No.
I mean, he's supposed to be a D-end,
isn't
he?
He played a little linebacker in college, I do believe. I don't want to speak totally out of turn, but he was not, I believe, a hand in the ground, nine technique, just pass rusher the entirety of his Tennessee career. I may be wrong on that. You may, you know, come back at me.
I thought that was the idea. It was absolutely the idea.
You have seen that.
But you think he's going to be Bruce Irvin.
Yeah, his first name was Bruce. His last name was Irvin. And from a build standpoint, this guy, very similar, 255 pounds of absolute rock, just rocked out horsepower. So if that guy can set an edge in this league against the Rams, all the horizontal run game, everything that you've got to do to play that, that would be a huge, huge, huge bonus. The Cody Barton to strong side linebacker, wasn't really buying that.
Well, the reason I don't know whether I'm not buying Cody Barton to strong side linebacker either. What I'm not sure I'm buying is that strong side linebacker is going to exist very much. I just, the way I'm seeing the NFL, and maybe Brock, you can tell me I'm crazy, is just with all the three wide receiver sets and specifically with everybody investing in tight ends. And I remember what you taught me years ago. You were the first person to really show me what a multiple tight end set could do to a defense. And it was before the Seahawks beat the Patriots years ago, right? The flea flicker game and Russell's ascension in 2012. When the Patriots came to town with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, and you were like, look, let me show you why this is such a challenge to defend, because both guys can be receivers and both guys can block. And good luck trying to figure out what you want to do on any play based on where they line up, because you have no clue. Now, turned out one of those guys was a murderer. That was a bit of an issue. Yeah. Some other things that ended up getting in the way. Yeah. But I've always kind of remembered that. And you're seeing more and more of these crazy hybrid tight ends that I think are putting crazy pressure on the defense. And my understanding, and if I think I'm reading this right, is that you're going to see more of these nickel and dime packages with more defensive backs, but with more defensive backs like that are like Blair and Adams, yes. Right? Yes. And Dig. I mean, the Seahawks could be throwing 3-4 safeties at you at a time.
Yes.
Forget about Big Nickel. They could be legitimately throwing 4 safeties at any given time out on the field.
Big dime. Mike. Big dime.
Seriously, I'm not. Yeah. I know it sounds ridiculous. I'm not going to say big dime ever.
Yeah.
Certainly not to Pete Carroll. I say this in his famous last words. Pete, are you going big dime? You can use big dime here at all, but isn't that essentially what you're doing? Isn't that why Jamal Adams is such a valuable piece for them? Because he allows you to do some of these. It's why Cam was such a difference maker. And I understand there's very few Cams. But when you see Mark Barron and you see all these guys over the last few years, whether they're linebackers that can run or safeties that can come down, it doesn't really matter what the position title is. They're the ones who are going to handle these crazy hybrid tight ends.
So you just said the way of the strong side linebacker in the NFL, that traditional strong side linebacker, is probably going away. Well, look at what the market's willing to bear for KJ. KJ had a double-digit tackle for loss season. KJ had a double-digit pass defense season. KJ was an effective strong side linebacker on a 12-4 football team.
Yeah, so don't.
And what did the market say to him?
Not interested. Now, some of that's age and this, that, and the other. But I wonder, and I don't know this, but here's my hypothesis: the market says yes. You caused, what, let's say 10 tackles for a loss. Okay?
11.5 tackles.
11.5. But the market believes that on those 11.5 plays, let's call them 12 plays, just for the sake of conversation, that on those 12 plays, while you caused tackles for loss, you only saved 5 yards per play, right? That if you hadn't made the tackle for loss, it was a running play, and there were other guys around, and... Okay, yeah, it was a 5-yard net difference. But on the play where you get beat over the top because you can't handle the speedy tight end, or they mess you up so that you have to cover some sort of a wide receiver, you gave up 60 yards. So cool. You came up with a nice play on what was going to be a 2 or 3 yard run. Great. We're happy about that. We'd rather be in 2nd and 12 than in 2nd and 8. But what we really don't want is a 40 yard bomb over your head.
Yes.
What we really don't want is a 12 or 15 yard first down where you can't cover the tight end who gets open down the middle. How many times, by the way, have we complained about the Seahawks giving up plays to tight ends open on the seam down the middle? And I'm not taking shots at KJ. I love the guy. Love him like everybody else does for all the right reasons. But if the league isn't valuing that, don't you think they have to be saying, well, what else are you missing? Or how valuable are those plays really?
That is absolutely a part of it. And I would say as well, where the Seahawks were a little bit of trendsetters, a little bit ahead of it, is if I'm going to carry that position, if I'm going to have a strong side linebacker for those teams that will run some power at me, right? That will try to set an edge in situationally, be it on the goal line or in short yardage situations.
Well, then we'll throw Cody Barton out for that.
Well, but even better, I'd rather have a guy like Bruce Irvin that is a pass rusher and a strong side linebacker. If I'm going to have big dime and I got to have a few more safeties, then I can't have both a strong side linebacker and a pass rusher. So do you know what I need? I need, like the spring league coach had, a tackle that is my long snapper.
Right.
There's only 38 guys on the spring league roster. So where can I find a spot? Where can I get an extra number?
And don't you have a Jamal Adams who can set an edge when he needs to? We've seen him do it.
He can, but I sure like to have 6'3", 255 of unbelievable power and strength.
Keep coming back to, all right, fine, but if I don't have that, what am I really giving up? A couple yards? Versus if the guy can't cover down the field, what am I giving up? 20 yards, 15 yards, 35 yards? It's the number given up is so huge in a big play league.
I think they call that analytics, Mike.
Call it whatever you want.
Do some analytics there.
Did we just do analytics?
I think we just did analytics.
Oh, it's cool.
Maybe. I don't know.
Brock's been trying that for 3 years. You finally got it.
I finally analyticsed him.
Felt so hot.
Brock, you've been analyticsed. I don't know. It's just a hypothesis, and I don't know exactly
hashtag
how this
longboard.
Works. But that's
long body.
Hashtag long body.
What did you say?
Longboard.
Longboard? Like you're surfing?
or skateboarding?
What are you talking about?
A little bit of both. You don't even remember. Don't worry about it.
I remember you writing hashtag longbody.
No, he tried to describe what hashtag longbody was and then read the description of what a hashtag is as hashtag longbody.
Join the conversation by filing and then hashtag longbody was a bunch of pictures of dachshunds. thankfully. It could have been a lot worse. So we just got a bunch of wiener dogs. Hashtag long body.
Are we about done?
I think we're about done. Yeah, I think that's actually done. Right there. Yeah, that's going to be the end of this particular podcast. Good. So hopefully everybody's learned something. We learned about Howdy and his coastal eliteness sitting in the...
in the club.
Sitting in the Diamond Club, the moneyed coastal elite. Yeah. Are you no longer going to give me grief about being an elitist now that you take these perks of the game?
Mike, I only got that because it was free.
So?
It's not like I paid for that.
So? I don't pay for some of the things you give me grief for. Are you kidding me? Oh my gosh. If that's going to be our barometer, then we're going to have a very different conversation. Hopefully we've learned a lot today. We will be back next week. Until then, the hey.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!